Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory, escorted by all of the angels of heaven, he will sit upon his royal throne, and all of the nations will be assembled before him. Then he will separate them into two groups, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. The sheep he will place on his right hand, and the goats on his left. The king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you have my Father's blessing. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food, and I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was ill, and you comforted me. I was in prison, and you came and visited me.' And then the just will ask him, 'Lord, when do we see you hungry and feed you, or see you thirsty and give you drink? When did we welcome you away from home or clothe you in your nakedness? When did we visit you, when you were ill or in prison?' And the king will answer them, 'I assure you, as often as you did it for one of these, my least brothers and sisters, you did it for me.' And then he will say to those on his left, 'Out of my sight, you condemned, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was away from home and you gave me no welcome. I was naked and you gave me no clothing. And I was ill and imprisoned and you did not come to comfort me.' And then they in turn will ask, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or away from home or naked or ill or imprisoned and not attend to your needs?' And he will answer them, 'I assure you, as often as you neglected to do it for one of these, my least brothers and sisters, you neglected to do it for me.' These will go off to eternal punishment, and the just to eternal life." The Gospel of the Lord. A most interesting gospel to end the year, right? You like it? What do you like about it? That's a lot, yeah? And what else? Pardon? You hope you're a sheep. I think a lot of people do. Question of how would I know that I am a sheep and that I'm not just an old goat? Really? It's a great gospel from that perspective. And as I reflected on it during the course of the week, I thought of this question. Why do you come to church? Why do you come to church? Why do you just put in a little effort or maybe even a large effort to come to church every Sunday? Thank you, Angela. Pardon? Would we be able to convince people if an alien arrived in here? Would we be able to convince them that there was really something going on here? If a Martian landed here in this place, would he believe that there's something going on here? Interesting. Makes for a pretty important question. Why do you come to church? That will be a valuable, and we will reflect on it for a while. We'll reflect on it for a few weeks because it is certainly worthy of reflection. As I thought about this gospel, there were two things that stood out to me at this particular point in my life. And the first one was, all the nations gathered before him. And the second thing was the least of my brothers and sisters. And the relationship that he makes between both of these realities. All of the nations. Who is all of the nations? Matthew mentions it 3 or 4 times in his gospel. And he is pretty specifically referring to all of the Gentiles. That is all of the non-Jews, the chosen people. It's a very interesting perspective because it doesn't say all of the Christian nations or all of the Catholic nations or all of the nations. How important is that? We love to get bogged down in little things. Well, maybe they're not going to heaven because they're not Christian and they're not baptized and, hey, they don't go to church, and on and on ad nauseum. All of the nations were gathered. He wasn't judging them. He was standing and proclaiming how they responded to the ultimate global invitation, the global invitation of the gospel to live as he lived. He didn't indict people. He simply enunciated how they had responded to the invitation. That's a pretty powerful gospel to end the year. How have I responded? You know, it's interesting. It doesn't mention how many times anybody went to church, right? Right. But it does mention a real depth. Did you recognize me? Why do I go to church? I went to a funeral yesterday in Columbus, a great man, a great individual. He was my own age. He died of melanoma. For the past 7 months, he had battled it pretty strongly, but had a pretty extraordinary faith and knew from the outset that the Lord was going to bring about whatever. He said, the Lord may leave me here to do a lot more, or he may take me, but he said, it's a win-win situation for me, whatever happens. It's a great understanding of faith. There was a huge crowd there. Last Saturday, when he arrived home from Houston to be taken care of, which was his wish, to be taken care of at home with his family, at the hospice care, he arrived home, and in his neighborhood, there were 300 people, they said. You know, they have a video of it, turned up to welcome him home. That's quite a statement of love and energy. That's because that's the kind of person he was. He belonged to a small little community Presbyterian church in Columbus, but he was extremely well known because he was a living witness to the gospel. Here's a little piece of what it said in the obit. And I thought it was really worthwhile because it certainly connected me to this weekend's gospel. It says, a devout Christian, Jimmy was a longtime member of Beersheba Cumberland Presbyterian Church, where he served as an elder for many years. He was passionate about the Salt and Light prison ministry and was enthusiastic to share stories of lives he saw changed through that organization. He strove to be the hands and feet of Christ, and one of his life's highlights was traveling through Israel, following in the footsteps of Christ. And just a little over a week ago, he asked his preacher to preach on, when his preacher asked him about what he should say and all of that, he said, just speak on Mark chapter 10, verse 45. He said, that's what it's about. Mark 10, 45, Jesus says to the disciples, I have come not to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. What was striking was that he knew that so well. And they held his funeral service at First United Methodist because it was the larger place. And they knew all of these people wanted to pay their respects, because little Beersheba, Cumberland, they wouldn't fit them all. It was really striking. And as I was there, and they have in First United Methodist in Columbus, they have the second level all the way around the church. I was very familiar with it from my days there and had been at services there many times. But it struck me sitting there, this is like the gospel for this weekend. For all the world, it looked like the judgment scene, and all of these people from every denomination. His pallbearers were some of his great friends. There was two Catholics. There was a Presbyterian, First Baptist member, First United Methodist. And I thought, what a wonderful, eclectic group. All celebrating his witness to the gospel. And one of the things that particularly struck me was they were there because he was a living witness. And one of the central pieces of his life was he belonged to a group of men, and many of those pallbearers were in that group that got together early morning every week to pray and celebrate their faith. Why did he go to church? Why do you go to church? He was filled with that zeal, and people saw it in him, and they were gathered there, rich and poor. They were gathered there from all of the main churches downtown, First Baptist, Presbyterian Church, Annunciation, First United Methodist, St. Paul Episcopal Church, and they were all gathered there celebrating this man's life. Why? Because he really understood that gospel. Not because of the number of times he went to church or anything like that. It struck me that was the judgment. Because one could be at church every week, but it doesn't tell me anything in reality about who you are, or your relationship to Jesus Christ, or any other detail. That's what the gospel is about. It's about getting out and practicing. As you think of your own life and your own experience and coming to church week in, week out, how many weeks has there been a change in your attitude or your disposition or your response to people at work or people that you work with? Does your church experience do anything for you throughout the course of the week? It's a pretty important question. Otherwise, I'm just marking time. How does it invite me to be changed? It was a really powerful experience seeing all of these people celebrating. They were rich and poor, and they were every denomination, and it reminded me, all the nations of the world, and some of them were the least of the brothers and sisters that he had been so attentive to. He loved that prison ministry, that salt and light ministry from their church group. And he loved to tell stories about lives that he saw changed. Do you tell in your workplace about lives that have been changed? Imagine if we moved out of here on a Sunday, and then on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday, we began to share about lives that were changed. It's the core of the gospel. We call it evangelization. He loved to celebrate the change that he saw in lives around him. Fundamental truth. Do you share? Maybe first of all, do you see change in lives? Do you stop to see change in lives? Do you seek change in lives? Do you hope for change in lives? It's a story about people who were gathered in a queue. They were lined up, and it reminded me when they were outside of First Methodist Church yesterday, and they went all the way around from the front door around the street and into the parking lot, and people were lining up, and Remember that story how these people were queued up all outside of the gates of heaven. And as they came to the gates, the Lord said, I've got to ask you a question. One question. Give me one reason why I should welcome you into the kingdom. Give me one reason. And the first man up, he said, Lord, I was a pretty religious man. I read my Bible every day. He said, I think I should be let in because I know the Bible really well. And the Lord said to him, if you wouldn't mind, just wait there for a moment because we will need to investigate why you read the Bible. And then the next person up was a woman. She said, Lord, I should be allowed in because every day I said my prayers. At nighttime I might have forgotten sometimes, but every day I prayed. And the Lord said, would you step aside for a moment because we may have to investigate, why did you pray? What did you pray for? And then a third one came and he said, Lord, I was not very religious in my life. I was an innkeeper, but he said, I never allowed a homeless person to stay without a room. In fact, in my place, my inn, I had a special place for people who were homeless and would invite and bring them there. And whenever I met somebody that was hungry or thirsty, I always attempted to give them food. And the Lord said, come on in. No investigation needed. It's probably the most significant piece of the gospel. Because over and over again, Jesus says it, and St. Paul reminds us of it, the one who loves much. Mary Magdalene, the one who loved much, much is forgiven. St. Paul, it's a recurrent theme throughout the New Testament. It is said that an action done for ulterior purposes or motives may be best not done at all. If you do something that is really nice for ulterior motives, for recognition or self-aggrandizement, it would be better not do it at all. But there's one exception. The one exception is charity. An act of charity towards someone else always benefits that other. And even if it is not the most pure motive on my part or on the part of the individual, it still benefits that other person. And it's the direct response to the gospel. When I was sick, imprisoned, or hungry, you did not recognize me. Doesn't say anything about the number of prayers I said or the number of devotions or anything else. It's pretty powerful. How did you do it in your workplace? How did you respond to this gospel? Back in 1880, in Paris, France, a priest arrived from Turin in Italy, and he arrived at the door of one of the rectories of the churches. And the priest came to the door when he rang the doorbell and he asked if he could have hospitality for the night. He said, I'm here from Turin in Italy and I'm gathering funds to build a church there. And so he looked a bit disheveled and a bit rough looking, unkempt and little unshaven. But the pastor gave him a place up in the attic. He said, yeah, there's a bed up there. You can spend the night there. And next morning, he went on his way and he raised some funds for the church. Many years later, his cause for canonization came up. His name was John Bosco. And when the priest heard that his cause was up for sainthood. He said, if only I had known, I would not have put him in the attic. I would have given him the best room in the house. Yeah, wouldn't we all? Wouldn't we all? How hard it is to see the face of the Christ in our suffering brothers and sisters. What is it that keeps us away from that? What is it that makes it difficult? Because every action and every good action, that was the powerful thing about celebrating the life of Jimmy Galloway yesterday. He saw it in people rich and poor alike. And right up to last week when all of those people came out to welcome him home, and then he died on Monday during the night, Monday night. He said it was a win-win. No matter what the Lord chose to do. That's what this gospel is about. It's a win-win. He's not judging us. He's simply declaring how we responded to him or how we chose not to. Does my coming to church change or have any impact on that reality? Why do you come to church?